Well, you know, I think secrets are interesting things because, you know, I'll tell you the story that happened during one of our rehearsals in one of the cities we were working on. In the middle of rehearsal, a girl just came up to me and she just whispered while the rehearsal was going on, you know that story of the girl in Congo who got raped when she was 15? Well, it happened to me when I was 11. She just whispered it during, and I was like, okay, we're in the middle of rehearsal. What do I do with that? Why did she tell me at this moment when I can't? And I said, obviously she told me right now because she doesn't want me to do anything. She just wants me to know, and I'll deal with it later. And so we talked about it later. And then a few days later, she came up to me, and she held out her iPhone, and I thought she was showing me the purple case on her iPhone, but what she was showing me was that she was cutting herself. And it was also during rehearsal, but this time I went outside with her. And we had a long, long talk about it. And I didn't get all over the deep end. I went, okay, so you're cutting yourself. So why are you cutting yourself? Talk to me about when you cut yourself and what does it feel like. And then we had this long discussion about her mother and being, you know, all her feelings. And she was gay and her mother, and just like she was having a lot of issues and problems. And I said, well, what if you wrote every time you wanted to cut yourself? What if you just, because I knew she was a writer. And I just said, what if you just start writing? Don't cut, write. You know, like this new campaign, don't cut, write, you know, and which I want to put on the V-Girl site, you know, if you were thinking of starving, vomiting, puking, cutting, mutilating, write, you know, or paint, or create. And it really, really. And so she's now sending me the most amazing pieces of writing when she wants to cut. And I just felt like, okay, it was a secret. And she told it to me, but then we were able to begin, and then she began to talk to the group about it and how she was writing, and then it began to be something that was upfront and open and something she could share. And I think secrets are for a while, and then they need to be broken open.
Women know that.
Yeah, they do.
We tell
they
secrets,
do.
And then yeah. We tell other people's secrets.
Yes. But not if they don't want you to. I don't tell secrets to people. I'm good at holding them. I used to be bad at it. Because when I was younger, I used to tell people secrets to garner attention and love and prove that I knew people better than they did. But now I'm actually able to hold secrets. It's taken a while.
Is one of the things you're trying to get girls to do is to be able to relate to their secrets differently, is to learn how to transform themselves?
Well, I don't know that I'm trying to get girls to do anything. Do you know what I mean? I think girls know what to do. I think I'm just trying to serve and pay attention and follow and love and cherish and honor and respect girls, you know? I think, this book, hopefully, you know, somebody said, are you now a spokesperson for girls? And I was like, oh God, no. I don't want to be a spokesperson for anybody. You know, what I feel is that the girl in me needs space here. And needs room here. And I want her to breathe and be alive. And a lot of mothers that I've been talking to who have been seeing the play keep coming up to me going, I want my girl back. I want my girl back. I want to be emotional. I want to be here. I want to be present. And I think, you know, particularly people in my generation and older than me, you know, we're not allowed to be our intense, wild, passionate, emotional selves, you know? And I feel like girls will free us if we let them. You know, so many mothers I talk to, they're like, oh my God, I've got a teenage daughter. And I'm like, what a blessing. What a blessing. What a blessing. You know, if we see it differently, it's sort of like seeing menopause as the end as opposed to the beginning, you know? And for me, menopause was absolutely the beginning of this amazing life, you know? And I think it's true with teenage girls. You know, we've been taught, oh my God, when your girls get teenagers, it's going to be so difficult. They're going to disagree with you. You're not going to understand them. That's just a story that's being told. What teenage girls can do is free us. They can free us. They can open us up again. They can remind us of our bigness and our passion and our devotion and our sexuality and our madness. And I love being around teenage girls. I just being in these rehearsals, they're like, Eve, you're just loving it too much, you know? But on a certain level, I think the reason I'm so happy lately is because I'm spending so much time with girls. And so I really urge parents not to see teenagers as threats or things you have to manage or fix or control, but really as the pathway to your own liberation, you know.
I'm going to go to another question. You are inspirational. I love you. It does say that. have you ever felt the need to underemphasize your gender in order to be heard?
To underemphasize? No.
Do the Hillary Clintons and the Madeleine Albrights of the world underemphasize their gender, you think?
Oh, Lordy. Can we go on to the
You
next?
Can say pass.
Pass. I don't think I want to go there. Let's moving on.
All right. Can you speak of how to engage young women in building a women's movement for justice, equality, peace? In other words, are you? It sounds like you're making activists with this movement, and what's the best way to do that if that's your goal?
Well, you know, I think having spent 12 years working nonstop to end violence against women and girls, and trying to work in various quarters, you know, whether it's political quarters or the UN or just all the various sectors. What I now believe, and I can only speak for me, is change will come from the people, period. I believe in activism. I believe in people changing reality. And I particularly believe in vagina warriors. And I will describe what is a vagina warrior. You know, all across the planet, if it's true that one out of three women are beaten and raped, there are a lot of women and girl survivors, and male survivors, men who have been through enormous violence themselves. And I think if you are willing as a survivor to feel your grief and feel your sadness and feel your sorrow and your rage and pass through it, what often happens is you then become devoted to ending violence for everyone. Mm. And your struggle to do that is not based on your desire for monetary gain or for political gain, but really because you want other people not to experience what you've experienced. Those people are vagina warriors, and they are the strongest, most powerful, potent leaders and activists on the planet, and there are thousands, if not millions, of them. And what I believe is that all those women and men were activated and came into their power and came into their voice and came into their energy, the world would shift overnight. Mm. So part of it is, how do we encourage young girls to become V warriors at a young age, to become V girl warriors? And what's exciting is to see this new website we just started, V Girls, and how many girls are now signing up to be activists and to put up what they want to do and what they want to create and who they want to influence and what they want to change. And I think when that starts to go, when we have teenagers and then college students and then it all is going to just happen. But part of it is all of us being willing to be activists. To really be activists, to be active all the time in transforming our communities, our families, our lives, and putting something forward. Because, you know, I don't believe any longer in governments. I don't believe in, you know, this last 3 years I've been to the White House, I've been to Downing Street, I've been met with Ban Ki-moon, I've met with, you know, and you know that feeling when you sit and you go, oh my God, the emperor has no clothes. These were the people I thought were running things and they had an idea, and they don't, okay? And I don't mean to be negative, but they don't, you know? So many people in power are there for their careers and are there to move themselves along, and they're not thinking, you know, about the stuff that matters to people, that matters to us. And we are thinking about that, and I don't even want to judge them. I just want us to become revolutionaries, all of us, and activists, and change the world, you know? Really.
I don't even know what to ask you after that. But I do want to read this question. If girls or women are not pleasing, how are we going to be loved?
Wow. Good question. Okay, that was a response to the question. Is love based on pleasing? Is that what love is? See, I think the fact that you asked that question was a really brave thing, because I think many people believe that pleasing is the same as love. Like when you please people, you will be loved. My experience, I don't know about you, is when I end up being a person who's pleasing, people actually lose respect for me and they walk all over me and they stop loving me. I think love is about respect. Love is about admiration. Love is about mutual reciprocity. And I think if the people you want to love you stop loving you if you don't please them, then maybe you should be loving somebody else. Mm. I mean, that's what I would say. And I think that's scary. I think that's scary, and I want to say something. I think what we're not taught as girls particularly is how to be alone. We don't know how to be alone. And look, it took me years to finally be okay being alone. It was really scary because the whole society is geared to couples and is geared to girls having somebody. And if you have somebody, then you have value. And if you are with a man or with you're in couple land, you're okay. And so much of our orientation is pleasing to get the man or pleasing to get the woman or pleasing to get whoever it is you're after and giving up something of yourself to do that. But then that eventually always tumbles in the long run. I think what girls need to practice is how to be alone, how to be okay to be in this inherent self, you know? And what I would strongly suggest, I really mean this, is that you travel the world, you learn how to drive a stick shift, you go by yourself, you sleep out under the stars, you go so far away that you're, you know, not being afraid of, you stop being afraid of coming back, that you really experience your own existential separate entity and you feel good in it. Because then when you get in a relationship, it's not to escape it or avoid it or pretend it isn't happening or, you know, avoid your own loneliness or avoid your existential reality. You're actually with somebody as a separate person who you're separately together with. And really, that's what a good relationship is to me. It's not, oh, will you make my sorrow, my sadness, my self-hatred, my doubt go away? Because people can't do that for you anyway, and you just hate them when they can't do it. So you might as well just do it for yourself, you know?
And I want to know where this wisdom came from. What did you have to go through?
Bad relationships.
What did you have to go through to get to the point that you appreciate being separate together?
Well, you know, all of that. Look, I wish I had known this when I was 17. Do you know? I wish I didn't have to go through the relationships where so much heartache and pain and hurt. But I know for me, you know, having come from a very abusive family where I had very, very low self-esteem and chronic self-hatred, you know, I wanted somebody to make that go away. So I found people who I was in relationships with people so they would say, you're not bad, you're good. You're not bad, you're good. That's all I wanted someone to say to me, you're good, you're good. I promise you, you're good. You know, because I so deeply believed in my own badness. And you know, you will always find the one person who won't do that. You know, it's a guarantee. There'll be 50 people who will tell you you're good, but you'll find the one person who will assure you you're bad. And then you'll work on that person for the next 50 years, you know? You know, and they'll never tell you, believe me, it won't ever happen, you know? But really, what suddenly occurred to me at a very late age, I'm sorry to say, is that nobody was going to tell me I wasn't bad. I wasn't bad. That it really was up to me. And I've really been through the last years of my life where it's been hard, you know, to just wake up every day and be the determiner of my own value and my own worth and then to walk in the world with that. But I will tell you, I would not give these years up for anything because I don't feel desperate anymore for anybody to give me my value and for anybody to give me my worth. And I think if girls did this at a younger age and they knew it at a younger age, they wouldn't go into relationships thinking that's the reason to be in a relationship, you know?
Do you think that when a 17-year-old hears that, they can actually hear it and
change? Can you?
Change?
Oh, yeah, they can hear it. Trust me.
I'm reading another one, and I'm going to interpret it. It's a question about fathers and teachers and other men in girls' lives. What can they do to support girls, knowing that so much of the culture is about protecting girls and allows bad things to happen to young women?
Well, you know, I really have been feeling so much in the last weeks watching fathers come to see these readings of the play and seeing how moved fathers have been. And, you know, I have a son, and he has two girls, so I have a son who I adopted who's very close in age to me. I know you're all going through the mechanisms of this and that. And, you know, I watch him with my granddaughters, and I watch him play with my granddaughters, and sometimes I think, my God, he's so bold with them. He gives them such a sense that, you know, he'll throw them, and sometimes my old self will be like, don't throw them. You know, I'll hear that voice, and I don't say this out loud, of course, it's just in my head. But I watch how courageous they are. I watch how strong they are. I watch how they walk in the world with such assurance because of it. And I think sometimes we tell ourselves we're protecting girls, but really we're protecting ourselves from how incredibly expansive and big and huge our girls can be. And I think fathers can really help girls by expanding the boundaries and pushing the boundaries and being bold, you know, and not frightening girls. Because I think often we frighten girls. We tell them, don't wear that, or don't do that, or be careful about that, or don't walk. And I'm not saying to be careless and reckless with girls, obviously. But I also think that the more fathers are able to be their girl selves, their emotional creature selves, their vulnerable selves, their open, passionate, grieving, sorrowful. Because I know so much of my experience with my own father was, my father didn't feel his melancholy and his sorrow. He just acted it out, right? In the form of violence. But I always knew what my father was feeling. So I was the person who held my father's feelings. I walked around the world with my father's feelings because he didn't have them. And I think if you have your feelings, your daughter doesn't have to have them for you, you know? And so I would strongly suggest you have your feelings, you know? Because I think a lot of time we carry our father's feelings into the world, and then we carry them into relationships, and we find people who are like our fathers, and we want them to have their feelings, and we carry their feelings, and, you know, and if all the men in our lives were just having their feelings, they would have theirs, and we would have ours, and everything would be really nice, you know?
What's your opinion about the studies that show at a certain age, right around fifth grade, girls stop being as bold, even in the classroom, speaking out and start turning inward? Do you think that you recommend all-girl environments for girls to be fully themselves?
I don't know if I would say all-girl environments. I think hopefully what I'm working on in Emotional Creature is it's just being conscious of girls and conscious of when we start to shut girls down and when we start to censor girls and mute girls and tell girls they can't be too sexual or too live or too intense or too passionate. And so much of it, we say we're protecting girls, but what we're really doing is we're shutting them and clamping them and reducing them. And I think it's just putting consciousness around it. You know, I think it happens so naturally that we don't even realize we're doing it. So it's just, you know, when you tell your daughter, don't wear that, okay, what are you saying? You know, what is the message you're communicating? Or when you tell your daughter, I don't know, there's just so many ways we speak to girls, and they end up being limitations as opposed to opening up.
Yet there's some girls or archetypes or stereotypes. I'm thinking of like a movie Precious or something like that, or maybe that's a bad example, but particularly African-American girls, larger size, that are allowed to be big and boisterous or expected to be. What do you make of all that when you see that in media, or you see that? Is that something that gives permission for girls to be louder, or do you think it is another way to shut people down?
I don't get the question completely.
I think what I'm asking is, in some cases, there's a stereotype of girls that are big, bigger than life, bold, loud. You see that most often with African-American girls that are heavier, you know, 15, 16, no you didn't, you know, uh-huh. Like that. Where does that fit into all of this?
Well, I think they can just instruct and lead us into our big, bold selves, you know, that's what I think. I think people get defined as the example of what you're not supposed to be, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And I think those are the people we need to look towards to be the people who open the doors, you know? Mm-hmm. I think part of what I've seen a lot about size and shape It's fascinating how girls are taught to be skinnier and skinnier and skinnier. I mean, if you look at all the implications of that, A, when you don't eat, you can't really think, okay? It's really hard to think on a raisin a day, to have big thoughts, okay? Okay, so two, you get really tired when you don't eat. So all you can do as a skinny, pretty person is sit there, okay? Okay, not so expansive either, okay? Third, when you get really skinny, you kind of disappear, so you don't even exist, okay? So if you just look at what it means to be a really skinny person, it's actually the evaporation of your essential being. And I think it's not surprising that that's the direction girls are being pushed in, right? It's so brilliant, right? That you're eventually, your whole life becomes either starving, shrinking, disappearing, not eating, not having thoughts. Eventually, you're just a pretty person sitting in a chair, muting, staring off in space, you know? Like, that's the ultimate, and I don't think that's accidental. So part of it is, how do we as women and girls refuse that? How do we say, and I'm not saying, you know, destroy your body and eat to the point where you explode. I'm not saying that. But I am saying that if $40 billion a year are spent on beauty products, $40 billion, imagine what women could do with that money and girls could do with that money. Imagine who we could be. And also, it's so genius that we spend our lives fixing this little country while many men, it seems to be, rule the bigger one, okay? I think we all need to be thinking about which country do we want to be operating in and which terrain do we want to have voice and say and power in. And I think really just being your beautiful, natural body self is one of the bravest, most revolutionary things you can do in America. And everybody just needs to do it. And get over it, because there is so much bigger work to be done, and we're spending so much time worrying and obsessing about it. You know, so I just want to encourage those girls at Berklee High School, be the trendsetters. Be the people who refuse. Start to be refusers, because the more we refuse, the more other people will begin to refuse. Okay. You know?
Beautiful. You said the word refuser, and I just have to ask you if you'd be willing to read that piece.
Yes, I want to read that piece. And I'm reading it tonight for all of the refusers in the audience, because I know just about all of you are refusers, am I correct? Yes. Okay. From the Lebanese mountains to the Kenyan village of Eldoret, we are practicing self-defense. First in karate, tai chi, judo, and kung fu, we are no longer surrendering to our fate. Now we are the ones who walk our girlfriends home from school. And we don't do it with macho, We do it with cool. Our mothers are the pink sari gang fighting off the drunken men with rose-pointed fingers and sticks in Uttar Pradesh. The Peshmerga women in the Kurdish mountains with berets in their hair and AK-47s instead of pocketbooks. We are not waiting anymore to be taken and retaken. We are the Liberian women sitting in the African sun blockading the exits till the men figure it out. We are the Nigerian women, babies strapped to our backs, occupying the oil terminals of Chevron. We are the women of Kerala who refuse to let Coca-Cola privatize our water. We are Cindy Sheehan showing up in Crawford, Texas without a plan. We are all those who forfeited husbands, boyfriends, and dates because we were married to our mission. And we know love comes from all directions and in many forms. We are Malala Joya, who spoke back to the Afghan lawyer Jirga and told them they were raping Lorlord, and she kept speaking even when they kept trying to blow up her house. And we are Zoya, whose radical mother was shot dead when Zoya was only a child, so she was fed on revolution, which was stronger than milk. And we are the ones who kept and loved our babies, even though they have the faces of our rapists. We are the girls who stopped cutting ourselves to release the pain, and we are the girls who refuse to have our clitoris cut and give up our pleasure. We are Rachel Corey, who couldn't move away from the Israeli tank. Aung San Suu Kyi, who still smiles after years of not being able to leave her room. And Frank, who survives now because she wrote down her story. And we are Netta Sultani, gunned down by a sniper in the streets of Tehran as she voiced a new freedom and way. We are the women riding the high seas to offer needy women abortions on ships. We are women documenting the atrocities in stadiums with video cameras underneath our burqas. We are 17 and living for a year in a tree and laying down in the forest to protect wild oaks. We are out at sea interrupting the whale murders. We are freegans, vegans, trannies, but mainly we are refusers. We don't accept your world, your rules, your war. We don't accept your cruelty and unkindness. We don't believe some need to suffer for others to survive or there isn't enough to go around. And we don't believe that corporations are the only and best economic arrangement. And we don't hate boys, okay? That's another story. We are refusers, but we crave kissing. We won't want to do anything before we're ready, but it could be sooner than you think. And we get to decide. We are not afraid of what is pulsing through us. It makes us alive. Don't deny us, criticize us, infantilize us. We don't accept checkpoints, blockades, air raids. We are obsessed with learning. On the barren tsunami beaches of Sri Lanka, in the desolate and soggy remains of the Lower Ninth, buried under the rubble and heartache of Port-au-Prince, we want school. We want school. We want school. We know if you plan too long, nothing happens, and things get worse in that everything is found in the action. And instinctively, we get that the scariest thing isn't dying, but not trying at all. And when we finally have our voice and come together, when we let ourselves gather the knowledge, when we stop turning on each other but direct our energy towards what matters, when we stop worrying about our skinny-ass stomachs or frizzy hair or fat thighs, when we stop caring about pleasing and making everyone so incredibly happy, we got the power. If Janis Joplin was nominated the ugliest man on her campus, and they sent Angela Davis to jail, if Simone Weil had manly virtues and Joan of Arc was hysterical, if Bella Abzug was eminently obnoxious and Ellen Johnson Sirleaf is considered scary, if Arundhati Roy is totally intimidated and Rigoberto Menchu is pathologically intense, if Michelle Obama is bare-armed and unapologetic and Julia Butterfly Hill is an extremist freak, call us hysterical then. Fanatical, eccentric, delusional, intimidating, eminently obnoxious, militant, bitch, freak, tattoo me witch, give us our broomsticks and potions on the stove, because we are the girls who aren't afraid to cook.
I'm speechless, which is something. That is amazing. Where do you get this passion and energy? You do this every night of the week.
Look at all the amazing people here. How do you not get passion from this? You know, wow. You know, it's so great to be alive, isn't it? We get to be alive, you know?
How do you want to be remembered?
Oh, God. I don't know. You know, I hope people think, I hope people have good sex forever. And, you know, I really think, you know, somebody was saying to me the other night, like, what's the most important thing? I never know what to say with those things, you know. I hope what's remembered is that when it all is said and done, we found a way to end violence against women and girls. Mm-hmm. That's what I want. Mm-hmm. I want to live in a world where women and girls are safe and free. Because if that happens, everything will have changed. Everything will have changed. Racism will have ended, and classism will have ended, and sexism will have ended. And so if we just keep the eye on that prize, where we imagine every girl that's born doesn't get born into fear, doesn't get born where she's told, you can't wear this, you can't go that at this, you can't walk here, you have to, But where we're free, we don't even know how unfree we are because we're so used to our enslavement and ourselves and the chains that we live in the world of violence that surround us in every single community on this planet. And so I don't care about me being remembered. I just want to live to know there will be a time in humanity where girls and women are free.
When I was preparing for this talk, of course, I Googled you, and I read a lot of reviews of this book. One of the reviewers said that when you read "I am an emotional creature," you understand the entire generation why, which I thought, after spending an hour with you, is way too limiting, and I wanted to ask you if part of this book is to help to bridge the generation gaps between older women and young girls, or between races, or is it something else?
Well, you know, I misread that review, and I thought it said Generation V, and because I see V's in everything, but. But the truth is, I'm interested in Generation V, and whatever that is, it isn't about older and younger. It's about freedom. It's about emotional freedom. It's about us being our truly empowered selves. And I think, as I was saying before, I think it goes both ways. I think girls free us, we free them. Girls free us. It goes back and forth. And I hope that this next generation of V girls rocks the planet and rocks us all and helps us all get to where we're supposed to go, you know. But I don't see it like us and them. I see it as us. And how do we build the V-ness of usness, you know, is what's interesting to me.
Well, on the V-ness of usness, my time on the stage has changed me. I want to thank you.
Oh, thank you
for
so
the gifts
much
that you gave. I want to thank everyone here for the questions and just say what an honor it has been
thank
to
you.
Be in your presence.
Well,
let's give
you're
her a round
amazing
of applause.
Thank you.
Thank you.